Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Bahar. This week, Rabbi Meir Schweiger discusses Bahar. Rabbi Meir Schweiger is a senior faculty member at Pardes and also serves as the Pardes Mashkiach Ruchani, the spiritual guide for Pardes. And now, Rabbi Meir Schweiger.
Thank you, Larry. This week's parsha is Parshat Bahar. Today I would like to examine the opening section of the parsha, which speaks about the sabbatical year, a topic which is especially relevant to those of us who are living in Israel, since this year is a sabbatical year. So let us begin chapter 25, verse 1. And God said to Moshe at Mount Sinai, saying, Daber b'nei Israel, speak to the Jewish people, v'amarta lehem, and say to them, Ki tavou el ha'aretz, when you come to the land, asher ani noten lachem, which I am giving you, v'shavta ha'aretz, shabbat lashem, the land will cease, a cessation to God. Sheish shanim tizra sadecha, 6 years you shall plant in your fields, v'sheish shanim tizmor karmecha, and 6 years you shall prune your vineyards, v'yasavta et tfuata, and you will gather your produce. Uvashana hashvi'it, and in the 7th year, Shabbat Shabbaton, a total cessation, Yela Aretz, shall be to the land, Shabbat Lashem, a Sabbath to God, Et Sadcha lo tizra, do not plant in your field, Charmecha lo tizmor, do not prune your vineyard, Et Sefiach kitzircha lo tiktzor, that which grows in your field, by itself, do not harvest. But in vain is zirecha lo tivtzor, and do not harvest the grapes. Shnat Shabbaton yela aretz. It shall be a year of cessation for the land. Let me stop now. The first thing which we're told is, this year is meant to be Shabbat Lashem, a Sabbath to the Lord. What does the word Shabbat mean? Shabbat means cessation, stopping. And as we read in the verses, if 6 years you work the land, you plant, you harvest, although in this section it doesn't speak about it, in other contexts, you plow. In the sabbatical year, you have to stop. There is to be no working of the land, no planting, no plowing, no sowing, no harvesting, no pruning. The sabbatical year for the land, and perhaps I will add, for the Jewish people as a people, is parallel to Shabbat, the Sabbath day. The Sabbath day, in its essence, is an individual observance, which is not linked with the land, which in fact we're told is to be done wherever we live. The sabbatical year is meant to be a people experience, or I should say an expression of peoplehood, which is very much linked with the land of Israel. But the idea is similar in both cases, with a little twist. The reason why we don't work on the Sabbath day is to remind us that God is the creator of the world. By us stopping to work, we acknowledge that ultimately we are not creators. 6 days we are engaged in melacha, which is creative work. We shape, we change. We show our mastery over the elements, over the world around us. But on Shabbat, we step back. And by stepping back, we acknowledge that God is ultimately the creator. God is ultimately the master of the world. Parenthetically, God rested originally on the 7th day of creation, paradoxically to show that ultimately God is in control of his creation. By resting, by stopping, God showed that there was no need to assert that mastery, that God could stop, step back, and still be in control. God could then go back the next day. In the sabbatical year, the reason why we do not work the land is to acknowledge God's mastery / ownership of the land, in particular, the land of Israel. Perhaps let me develop this point for a moment. If in the creation story, God created the world in 6 days, stopped, handed over the continuation of creation to people, gave us the mandate to rule over the world, to conquer it. And that is exactly what we do during the 6 days of the week, that we become partners with God in creation. We demonstrate how we are creators. On the seventh day, we stop to step back, acknowledge that with all that we do, ultimately, God is the creator. It's a way of perhaps putting in perspective who we really are. Now let's go to the sabbatical year. 6 years, we work the land, we produce, and hopefully we are very, very successful in what we do. There is a sense of empowerment. We have mastered the land. And if I may insert parenthetically, in the state of Israel today, Israel takes pride on its technological breakthroughs. We have become a superpower in the area of agriculture. We have succeeded in making the desert bloom. Comes along the sabbatical year and says, don't work the land. Recognize that ultimately, whatever success you have is given to you by God. You ultimately do not master the land. God ultimately is the master of the land. I think I mentioned in previous podcasts that throughout the Torah, and this is especially true in next week's parsha, in Parshat Bechukotai, there is the sense that when the land of Israel is producing and when it's successful, that's because God is now intervening and bringing to fruition the fruits of all of our labors. And therefore, on the sabbatical year, with all of the ingenuity which we have, with all of the creativity, with all of the technology, the fact that in the end we are successful is to be attributed to God. To acknowledge that ultimately God is the master of the land, not us. And that is the idea of Shabbat Lashem. And this point is actually articulated later on in chapter 25, when the Torah itself raises a question which anyone would ask. V'chitomru, and if you will say, Ma nochal bashana shvi'it, what will we eat in the seventh year? Hein lo nizra v'lo nesof et tvuatenu. Behold, we did not plant, and we did not gather in our produce. And in 21, God says, V'tziviti et birchati lachem, bashana shishit, I will command my blessing to you in the sixth year. V'yasatetat tvua, it will make the produce. L'shalosh shanim, hashanim, for 3 years. Uzratem et hatvua bashana, uzratem, excuse me, et hashana shmiit, you will plant in the 8th year. V'achaltem et hatvua yashan, and you will still eat even in the 8th year from the old produce. Ad hashana hatshiit, until the 9th year. Ad bo tvuata, when the new produce will come. Tochlu yashan, you will eat from the old. Which means, what is the Torah saying? You will ask, how can I eat? How can I possibly sustain myself if I am not working the land? God will give you a blessing in the 6th year. Because ultimately, God is the ruler of the land. Because ultimately, what you have is a gift of God. So that every 7 years, we have to keep in perspective, we are not the masters. With all that we do, and I will add, and it's significant that we do that. I would even say there's an imperative of working the land, making the desert bloom. Yet nevertheless, we need to acknowledge that what is produced is the blessing of God. First idea of the sabbatical year. Second idea of the sabbatical year. By resting in the sabbatical year, and I read this verse, it is a Shabbat la'aretz. It is a cessation to the land. This point is made in verse 4. Shabbat Shabbaton ye la'aretz. It's reiterated at the end of verse 5. Shabbaton ye la'aretz. What does it mean that this is a cessation to the land? This is a derivative of the first point. If God is the owner of the land, which is the first thing which we need to recognize. The second thing which we need to recognize is the holiness of the land. By resting, we are acknowledging the holiness of the land. How is that expressed? If you look at verse 6, V'hayta shabbat ha'aretz lachem le'ochla. This cessation of the land will be to you to eat. And the rabbis make the following drashot. It should be to you to eat and not to do business. It should be to you to eat and not to throw out. Which means, from this word le'ochla, we derive the concept of the sanctity of sabbatical year fruit. Any fruit which grows in a sabbatical year has holiness. How is that holiness expressed? You're not allowed to throw out that fruit. Everything. You have to maximize the usage of whatever grows. If it's something which is used to be, which can be used for human consumption, don't give it to animals. If it's something which could be given to animals, don't just use it, okay, for building material. Maximize the usage of the product. And of course, don't take a bite out of an apple and then discard the rest. By the same token, whatever is grown is meant to be for your personal consumption. Don't commercialize it. Don't grow things to sell it. So that the holiness of the produce is reflected by acknowledging that if these fruits are growing, let me enable them to maximize their potential. If they're meant to be eaten, let them be eaten. Let nothing be wasted. Let me not denigrate the food which is meant to be eaten and then to use it rather than being an end in itself to be a means to make money. So that the next stage is to recognize the holiness of the land, and through that, the holiness of the produce. Another law which we derive is that the produce of the sabbatical year must be eaten in the land. You can't eat it outside the land. You can't export it. Just as in the temple, sacrifices needed to be eaten in what could be called sacred space, so too, the produce of the land is like a sacrifice, a holy object that needs to be eaten in sacred space in the land of Israel. Based on these things which I've been saying, people see the laws of the sabbatical year as reflecting concepts of ecology, conservation, being in tune with the land. But it's very interesting that Jewish ecology is rooted in sanctity, in seeing holiness in the land, in its produce, in seeing somehow the hand of God, the presence of God in that land, which therefore means that I have to treat it with the proper awe and respect which is coming to it. And then we get to the third point. This cessation of the land, which is to you to eat, in verse 6, Lecha ula'avdecha v'la'matecha, is to you and your maid and your servant and your maid, to your hired hand. And then in verse 7, and to the animals, and to the beasts which are in the field. And from this the rabbis derive an interesting idea. Two things. Then number one, a person is not allowed to fence off his field in the sabbatical year. Everyone, including animals, should have equal access to what is growing in the field. The produce of the sabbatical year is hefker, ownerless. And what is reflected in this idea? What we would call social equality. And because of the social equality, a sense of social bonding, a sense that no one is better than the other. We are all equally holy. So that if I summarize the three major ideas of the sabbatical year. Number one, Shabbat Lashem. Acknowledging God as the owner slash master of the land. Acknowledging that whatever is produced by the land is the blessing of God. Number two, because of that, acknowledging the holiness of the land and its produce. And the derivative of that, to not waste, to not commercialize what grows, to eat it in holy space. And the third point, to acknowledge the holiness of the community, a holiness which is based on social equality, on camaraderie, on bonding. It is very appropriate that Parshat Bahar and next week Parshat Bechukotai, which very often go together, are the closing chapters of the book of Vayikra. In a previous podcast, I think that I mentioned that the book of Vayikra is referred to as Torat Kohanim, the book of the priests. And generally that's because the book is dealing with the laws of the temple, laws of sacrifices, laws of ritual purity and impurity. But in fact, the book as a whole is really dealing with the question of how do we construct an ideal society. And that point comes to a head in our parsha, with the laws of the sabbatical year and the jubilee year. How do we become a mamlechet kohanim v'goy kadosh, a kingdom of priests and a holy nation? There is a very famous question which is asked. Our parsha begins by saying, in the opening verse, and God spoke to Moshe at Mount Sinai, and he gave him the following laws, which have to do with the sabbatical year. And the Midrash asks the question, Ma inyan Shemitah itzel Har Sinai? What's the connection between Shemitah and Har Sinai? And the answer which is given in the Midrash is, just as the laws of the sabbatical year were given in their generalities and in their specifics, so too were all the laws at Sinai given in their generalities and specifics. So that the juxtaposition, the sabbatical year, becomes a kind of archetype for all the laws that were given at Sinai. I would like to suggest a different answer to this question. The Jews as a people first come to Sinai in chapter 19 of the book of Shemot. It is in that chapter that the Jewish people, in the third month, on the first day of the month, encamp by the mountain. And it is in that chapter, in chapter 19, a few verses later, where God says to Moses, and you shall be to me a mamlechet kohanim v'goy kadosh. And what I would like to suggest is that everything which God tells the Jewish people, from that point on, from chapter 19, through our parsha, and I would even say, which climaxes in our parsha, and I will add also next week's parsha, is to give us all of the laws, all of the tools, to make us into that mamlechet kohanim v'goy kadosh. And so that the idea is, everything which we studied at Sinai will come to a head, and perhaps will come to its actualization when we observe the laws of the sabbatical year, the jubilee year. This becomes the crowning expression of our being a holy nation. I would like to add one more point, which I mentioned earlier, just came to me a few days ago. The observance of the sabbatical year may actually be an attempt every 7 years to reenact the experience of the Jews in the desert. Perhaps what I will say, to go back to basics. There are a number of very interesting parallels between the sabbatical year and between chapter 16 in the book of Exodus, the section that talks about the man, the manna. The manna does not fall on the Sabbath day. Every day there is manna which falls. The Jews are not allowed to leave over to the next day. If they leave it over, it will rot. Everyone gets exactly the same portion of manna. So think about it. Everyone gets the same portion of manna, social equality. Don't leave it over, it will rot. Make sure that you use it to its maximum ability. Every day you need to gather it, and on the Sabbath you don't. But if we don't gather in the Sabbath, how are we going to eat? Because you'll get a double portion on the sixth day. Why? Because God is blessing you in the same way God does in the sabbatical year. Why were those laws constructed? So that the Jewish people, in their experience in the desert, would acknowledge that the most basic elements of their existence are a gift of God. I've mentioned already in a previous podcast, in chapter 8 in Deuteronomy, God says to the Jewish people, remember what happened in the desert, how God afflicted you, and he gave you the manna. Why? So that you should recognize that not on bread alone does man live, but rather on all that comes, issues out of the mouth of God, does man live. And later on in that section in chapter 8, it says, beware, lest you become very successful, become extremely wealthy, and you become arrogant. You forget God. And you say, Kochi va'otzem yadi asali et ha'chayel hazeh. The strength and power of my hand made all this wealth for me. So that the Torah, by giving us the sabbatical year, is having us reenact the experience in the desert. Reenact the experience of having manna in the desert. Not by having manna, not by having miracles, by living in a real world, in what we would call a normal manner. But somehow, by not working, acknowledging, day in, day out, for a whole year, how much we are dependent on the blessing of God, so that we don't become arrogant. To value the land which we have, to value the produce which we have, to not take it for granted. And that can also be a derivative of being the master. If I am the master, I can do whatever I want. Maybe being a master also means you have a responsibility. And therefore, don't just waste the produce. Don't cheapen it. Don't commercialize it. Don't see the produce as a stepping stone for your self-aggrandizement. And as I said, the last thing, if I go back to the desert, there were no social classes. Everybody was on equal footing. Everybody received the same portion of manna. Never forget that. Never forget the sense of social equality. Let's try to bridge those gaps between the haves and the have-nots. Interestingly, in chapter 31 of Deuteronomy, we have another mitzvah, which is called Hakel, gather the people together. And it says explicitly in the opening verses, at the end of 7 years, at the end of the sabbatical year, going into the 8th year, on the festival of Sukkot, after we've experienced the sabbatical year, what do? We gather the people together. And the rabbis understand this. The people are gathered together on the Temple Mount. And there is a public reading of the Torah, which is done by the king. This is Hakel, gather everyone, men, women, children. And the king does a public reading. And it says there, so that the people will fear God. And many commentaries see this as a reenactment of the giving of the Torah at Sinai. And given what I just said right now, it's very, very appropriate. We spend the whole year, the sabbatical year, reenacting the experience in the desert, realizing that whatever we have materially is the gift of God, realizing that whatever we have is meant to be shared with all those around us, valuing everything which God has given us. And that becomes the basis for then having this ceremony on the festival of Sukkot, which is also reenacting the experience in the desert of the booths which we dwelt in. Now we're ready to receive the Torah. Let us reenact that experience as well. So that it seems, for us as a people, we always need to somehow refocus. We always need to put things in perspective. It is very important that we produce and we succeed and that we develop and that we become a kingdom mastery, but that we also realize we are priests, servants. We realize that we're a kingdom that is meant to serve. First and foremost, to serve God. To become a people who bond together who then can serve the world. This is the vision. And I would say that vision, I think, becomes especially important to us who are living in today's state of Israel. If we look back over the past 67 years at how far the state of Israel has come in terms of its economy, in terms of its technology, science, its standard of living, we have become literally a mini superpower. There is a tremendous amount for us to be proud of, to feel how we have accomplished an unbelievable amount. But we need to somehow always look back. Perhaps we need to go back to basics, to not become intoxicated with our successes, but perhaps to now say to ourselves, how do we take that and become a more refined people, a more moral people, a more socially responsible people? How do we take everything that we've created and bridge the gap between rich and poor, between the different elements of our society? How do we really become a holy people that in the end can be a light unto the nations, can be a model which the world looks at, and rather than scorning, and rather than castigating, seeks to emulate? This is our goal. This is our mission. May God help us be that light unto the nations. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Schweiger. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.